Let's, I guess we'll start out with the official. This is Ink Studs on CITR 101.9 FM. My conversational guest, I think that's how I'll put it, is Austin English. I really want to say Austin Spanglish after seeing Victor Caro write that on Facebook, but I've let it out now.
I certainly haven't heard that before.
It's just, I don't know, something about Victor's turn of phrases just stick with me.
He's like a genius at turn of phrases.
He's a genius at creating shit.
Yes, he's a genius at a lot of things.
I love that man. He's wonderful, and he'll probably yell at me. Your first book was, is it your first book, Christina and Charles, or did you do mini comics before that, I guess?
I did, yes, I did do mini comics before it, before that, but that is my first book, too.
Your first spined book.
First spined book, yes, Christina and Charles.
As well, since then, you've put out books one and two of Windy Corner Magazine.
Yeah.
All from wonderful Sparkplug Books, our good friends in Portland.
Sparkplug Comic Books.
SparkplugComics.com, or is it Sparkplug Books?
SparkplugComicBooks.com.
There we go. So, tell me about yourself, Austin. Who are you? Where did you come from? Let's get that biographical stuff.
Okay. I was born in San Francisco, California, where I lived until I was 18, and I made mini comics in high school. It was called The Tenth Frame, and I started doing it in my sophomore year of high school, and it was supposed to be a continuing comic biography of Thelonious Monk, the jazz pianist.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't finish it, but I kept putting out issues of The Tenth Frame until I guess my sophomore year of college. And when I was 18, I left San Francisco to go to school in New York, where I have lived to this day.
And love it?
I really love New York. I miss San Francisco a lot, but New York is very nice. So I guess that's a sketch. That's a biographical sketch.
Now, you got really involved in the whole comic scene at a pretty young age. When did you first start writing for the Comics Journal?
I think I started writing for the Comics Journal before I had actually put out a mini comic. Although I can't remember now, but I think the first thing I did for the Comics Journal was an interview with Lloyd Dangle, who does, he used to do a comic book series for Drawn and Quarterly called Dangle,
yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's like a really underappreciated cartoonist.
Only four issues came out.
Huh?
I think only four issues of that ended up coming out.
Yeah, and they're hard to find. But he's most well known for this weekly comic strip he does, a political comic strip called Troubletown, which I really love. So I did that interview with him. When I was very young and in high school, comics were very important to me, and they really resonated with me, and I really wanted to be involved with them in some way, and I didn't really know how exactly, but I lived in the Bay Area, and I knew there were all these cartoonists living in the area, and I was, when I was in high school, I was very shy, but I somehow was so interested in comics that I kind of forced myself to contact these different cartoonists like Dan Clowes and Adrian Tomine and Lloyd Dangle and do interviews with them, even though I was very nervous about doing it. I sort of had this like huge desire to do it, and I did one with Lloyd Dangle, which I sent to the Comics Journal, which they printed, which was very exciting for me.
So you did it out of your own accord, and they were gracious enough?
I think so. I think I might have written to them saying, "Hi, I'm doing all these interviews with Bear cartoonists. Would you be?" I was going to do it anyway, and I said, "Would you be interested in any of them?" And they, I think, had been waiting to do a Lloyd Dangle interview for a while. So that's how that happened.
You just took care of it for them.
Yeah.
So, what got you into doing your own mini comics? Was it just being around all these folks and just wanting to express yourself, or?
Well, I didn't. When I was doing those interviews and stuff, I didn't really know any cartoonists personally like I do now. But I remember going to the comic store every week, and I was becoming really interested in this different type of cartoon, like this more artistic type of cartooning that I was seeing. And I remember picking up mini comics at my local comic book store by Ben Catmull. They had some by Gabrielle Bell and some other people too. And I just remember looking at these things, and they were so like Ben and Gabrielle's mini comics were so well done, and they were such beautiful pieces of art. But they were also, I could also intellectually understand how they were put together, and it was kind of this mind-blowing thing where, like, as a teenager, I would go to see movies, and, like, I would see a Hal Hartley movie or something, and I would think, wow, I love that movie. I'm very affected by it, but I have no idea how to make a movie. But I would pick up these mini-comics, and I was just as affected by these mini-comics, but I could understand how these people put them together. You could tell that they were Xeroxed and just folded and stapled, and there was just something about that where it was this thing clicked where I saw that you could do something really artistically potent, and you could try to do something very well, but you could produce it in kind of a modest way. So that was pretty affecting for me. And I guess seeing those things is what made me feel like I could do a mini comic, and I could not just do a mini comic, but pursue doing good art through doing mini comics.
Now, the themes that you kind of, I guess, go through with your mini comics, I haven't read your mini comics, but through your comics, through the Christina and Charles and the Windy Corner strips, it seems very focused on, I guess, I don't want to say childhood, because I don't mean it in like a childhood kind of way, but it's like different parts of childhood. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Is that something that you're looking to explore, or is it just something you're kind of drawn to?
I guess when I sit down to write a story or draw a story, I guess what I'm more interested in childhood is kind of family relationships or family dynamics. When I read books or watch movies or read comics, I love movies that are about relationships or stuff like that, but I always am more compelled by family works of art about families. I don't know why exactly, but there's something about that I'm always interested in. And I seem to, when I sit down to write a story, I seem to have a backlog of things I want to say about family relationships. So I guess that's why, and, you know, my memories of family stuff is from my childhood. Maybe when I'm older, I'll do, I guess maybe I've processed thinking more about living with my parents than I've processed, you know, my early 20s. So maybe that's why it comes more naturally for me to write that stuff.
Now, was moving in a home and going to New York, was that a big, I guess that must have been a big transition just as far as your own internal psyche?
I guess. I don't know.
Am I deemed too fancy?
This is becoming a very kind of psychoanalytic interview.
I'm going to do NPR on you.
I think the just the change in location from San Francisco to New York was a big thing. But I don't know. Maybe. Maybe it was a big shift.
And the reason I was saying childhood was... Christina and Charles doesn't really feel like family to me. Like, it's separate, but together love stories. Is that a good way of putting it?
Well, I mean, it's like two brothers in the second half. So, I mean, I don't know. I think of maybe even with Christina and Charles with the first half where it's not necessarily a girl totally interacting with her family for the whole thing. I think of her as someone who's living with her family, I guess, even if there are parts where she's not being written about as interacting with her family. It seems like someone living with their family to me. But yeah, I mean, I am interested in writing stuff about childhood, but I think it's just I'm interested in childhood via family.
Mm-hmm. It seems like there's kind of a sense of whimsy, if that's what I'm looking for.
Yes, I've been told that. I think I'm trying to counter
the whimsy.
Sense of sense of whimsy in my and the stuff I'm doing now. I think it seeped in to my early stuff, but yes, I like whimsical works of art, so I'm sure that that sense of whimsy is totally there. But I think I'm trying to drift away from that.
Now, earlier you were talking about Thelonious Monk, and one thing that struck me about your more recent work is the wordplay that you do, and it seems like it's kind of jazzy sudden stops, where it's like everything kind of connects together, but it's like you got to keep going and going and going, but it's stopping at the same time. Like mid sentence, you're going to the next panel.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you noticed that. I do that thing in some windy corners where it transitions from panel to panel like that. And I also have been trying to do this thing with this serial I'm writing, Life of Francis, where the episodes kind of end, like they sort of stop on a dime a little bit, instead of like I guess in a lot of art comics you'll have these endings and all this stuff will happen and then the character will like be on a plane and there'll be like five silent panels and then like they'll turn their head and it'll be this very like drawn out
shortcomings.
I guess that was what I was unconsciously describing. But there's a lot of like Seth will, or maybe he'll open stories more like this, but there'll be this lots of like silent panel kind of intro and outros, and I kind of, which I totally like, but I've been trying to sort of do this thing where I sort of end stories like right at the there's this writer, Jane Bowles, who I really like, who does this, who I started reading after I tried doing this, and she kind of like confirmed to me that maybe it's a good thing to work on. But it's like just having the melodramatic thing happen in the story, and then sort instead of like tiptoeing away from that melodramatic peak, sort of just like stopping on a dime right there. So I'm trying to do that. I don't know how well it's working, but.
Now, do you see the stories working as a whole, or are they separate entities?
Yeah, this Life of Francis thing I'm doing, I'm serializing it, and it's probably really maddening for people to read in Windy Corner, because I'll do, like, five or six pages of it, and then it will be continued in the next issue. And I don't know if people are, I try to make the story stand on their own. For me, it's part of a long, long story I'm working on. But I don't know if people have the patience to wait, read six pages of a story and then wait a year for me to put out the next Windy Corner. It's kind of a crazy thing to do. But I guess I am thinking of it as a long story, but I'm trying my best to make it understandable on its own. And the memory comics I do, they're all short stories, and I plan on collecting them, but I think they work on their own okay. Mm-hmm. But I think once they're collected, and my original idea was to do all my memories that I've had before turning 10, and then collect those in a book. And I hope to collect those in a book someday, because I think that would come across well as a big book of memories.
Now tell me about what you use. Like, it seems like looking through the pages that they're like, you kind of just grab a piece of paper and that's going to be that panel, and it doesn't seem to be like a cohesive, like you have your stack of pages all the exact same size. Like, it seems like you just, it all kind of works together and eventually makes the story.
Huh, yeah. I guess I'm friends with this cartoonist, Molly Goldstrom, and we always talk about how the most impressive comics to us are when people can construct like a grid comic where there's like 9 panels on each page, and I keep doing it for every page, which I love reading. Those are like the most enjoyable comics to read. But I have tried to make those kind of comics so many times, and it's incredibly hard. And what I do is sometimes I set out to do those kind of comics where every panel is the same size, but then I'll do 2 panels at the same size, and then the next panel will just be like, 3 times as large, and I just can't seem to. Well, the way I make comics is I sit down now and I do a drawing and I let it be whatever size it becomes, and I sort of just focus on panel by panel, and then when I'm done with the story, I cut all the panels out and I paste them up on pieces of paper. So it's a thing that Chester Brown described doing.
Mm-hmm.
But he, what's funny about him is like that's his process of doing a panel and then cutting it out. But he does it in that perfect grid style, where I do it in like the opposite of that. But I think Chester Brown's way of editing and doing comics is sort of the way that makes the most sense for me, where you just focus on a panel and then you you put it together later. He shows how he does that in one comic, and I was very inspired by that.
The return to whatchamacallit, I can't remember.
Helfer? I can't. It's like Helder.
Yeah. Well, the thing about someone like Chester Brown is that to get to that process is very controlled of what he's doing, because you're seeing that kind of that last part of the thing. And I think it's more, not so much with that stuff, as more recent stuff with his like Louis Riel stuff, where he'll do like layers of like vellum, of so he arranges all the figures in the panel till
Wow.
he has them in the actual spots. Yeah, it's really fascinating. Like he had this, he did this poster, this Wonder Woman poster for I think it was a fundraiser for the Write Awards, and they had the poster, and then they had another auction that was what made the poster. And it was all the different parts. And I think Seth does that a bit too, not so much as Chester, where it's just like, you know, you'll have this character and you'll have that character, and it's just like move it until it's in the exact right position, and then
he's
got his
panel. I mean, Chester Brown is easily one of my all time favorite cartoonists. It's really interesting that that's his process. I do feel very like my process couldn't be more different than that. I sit down and I work directly in ink. I use a nib with a G pen nib, and I don't pencil the panels out or anything. I just do them in ink, and I keep drawing the same panel until it looks like something I like. I've tried to do the normal way of penciling comics first and then inking them, but I can never seem to get comfortable with that.
Well, it's the, I guess it's kind of the old beat idea of just getting it out, right?
Yeah, maybe it's something like that. I've tried to do comics in so many different ways, and I always ask cartoonists how they put together their comics, and I think something about cartooning is that everyone has their own personal eccentric approach.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you're sitting at your table doing your comic, you're like, the way I'm putting this together is totally crazy, and this is the wrong way to make comics. And then the more you talk to other cartoonists, you realize everyone has their own kind of odd approach. And for me, at least, the more I've talked to other people about how they make their comics, the more comforted I am in my own way of making them.
But it is interesting to see the different approaches and stuff, especially when you get to look in your original pages to see all the stuff that's gone into that page.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a Chris Ware page for one of the Thanksgiving pieces, and you could tell he had done that page about 20 times before he decided on what he actually inked.
Huh.
And that's just got to be maddening, of just like, okay, I'm not happy with that hand there, I'm going to erase it and draw that hand there. And
well, that's the thing about comics. It's like you have to make all those choices. You have to make you have to decide if the person's going to be in profile or looking at you straight on. It's pretty crazy.
There's more to it than just pitches on the paper.
True.
Now, one thing you're happily exploring with Windy Corner is other artists' process, and with your own blogs, I guess the 20 questions. Are you still doing that?
I am still doing that. I'm doing it a lot less than I used to, but yes.
You kind of started out with a bang with, I don't know, how
many
interviews
you
did.
Yeah, I did a bunch. I wish I'd paced myself a little bit more, no, I'm definitely still doing that.
So, what's your interest in continuing to explore other artists, and what kind of artists are you attracted to for kind of delving into their method?
Well, I guess the reason I do that blog and that I'm interested in interviewing cartoonists is probably a really personal thing. It's probably just for myself, where I really it's comforting to hear other people's, the way other people make art, because I feel like the way I make art is so strange, but I don't know, making comics or drawing is such an important thing to me, and I just inexplicably love hearing what other people's processes with drawing are. So doing that blog is kind of like this excuse for me to ask people, when I hang out with cartoonists, those are the questions I like sort of want to ask them. So doing that blog is like this great excuse to get to ask all those questions, and I can kind of present it as like, you know, this entertaining blog that I'm doing, but it's really just like this personal thing.
Your own research.
Yeah. And the other question was, what kind of artists am I attracted to in finding out about their, mm-hmm. their process? Well, I guess in terms of that blog, I'm interested in what everyone does, but in terms of the artists that I put in Windy Corner, I kind of, to me, all the people I put in Windy Corner, like Fiona LaGouche, and in the next one, I'm going to have this artist, Sakura Maku, there's these group of artists that I think are, there's so many different kinds of cartoonists, and I grew up reading Dan Klaus, who I think is one of the greatest artists in the world, but I also think there's so many different kinds of cartooning, and then there's people doing this kind of cartooning that couldn't be more far removed from what Dan Klaus does. Like, Fiona LaGouche is, to me, just as valuable an artist in my own personal world of art that's been a help to me. Fiona LaGouche is, like, right up there, but I don't think normal comic readers would necessarily look at her stuff and go, that, you know, they would look at that and go, that is, you know, wonderful comic making. They would perhaps appreciate it, but they wouldn't necessarily, like, see it as part of the whole world of cartooning. And I think people like Fiona LaGouche and Sakura Maku and a host of others are artists that are important to me and that I really adore, that don't necessarily, like, fit into the traditional mm-hmm. mold of cartooning. Although I do want to express that I love the traditional mold of cartooning, too.
Well, that's just, you look at the folks, I mean, the two major interviews you have are John Hankovich and Miss Andries Arp, and both are kind of, to me, they're like, I don't want this to come across sounding pretentious, but they're like fine artists doing cartoonists. Or doing
comics. Yeah, well, that's I'm sure they would appreciate you describing them that way. Well, John is, he's someone who fits the traditional mold of cartooning in the sense that he can draw anything. Like, if he was around in, you know, the late 50s, early 60s, and he wanted to, I'm sure he could have drawn anything that DC or Marvel at the time would have wanted him to draw. He can draw in any style and make it look beautiful. So he fits that mold of cartoon, but his...
But when he's drawing what he wants to draw, it's something else completely.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, he's sort of... I had Jeremy Onsmith interview him because I think there's certain artists that I can make perceptive statements about, but John is just someone who I'm so in awe of that I don't even know how to approach his art. Although reading that interview was very illuminating. But, John is definitely a fine artist. And to me, Fiona is a fine artist, too. But I think it might be a mistake to think of them as fine artists doing comics because their fine art comes out of doing comics.
Mm-hmm.
Like with Fiona, I think she makes these images, and her images become so interesting because she's telling a story, and the narrative of the story sort of pushes out these really interesting images from her mind.
Thank you.
That's something, talking about Jeremy Onsmith doing the interview with John, that's something you've talked to me before about, is how much you love seeing what other artists have to ask other artists.
Well, I'm sorry, what?
Something you've mentioned before, kind of in connection with the John Hankovich interview by Jeremy Onsmith, is that you've mentioned before how you love having cartoonists interview cartoonists.
Yes, I do. I really do like that. There's this cartoonist who you might know, Zach Sally, who does he does this comic called Sammy the Mouse, and he's done interviews with Kim Deitch and John Porcellino that are somehow to me like these amazing interviews that have, maybe there have been times where I've been like been down on comics or having a hard time doing comics, and when I read those interviews that Zach Sally has done, they're just like, so they just really make you excited for comics in this way where there are these two people talking about comics and making them, and, you know, in Zach Sally's interview with Kim Deitch, there's a point where Zach gets, like, really frustrated with how hard comics are, but there's this two artists interview each other, there's, like, this mutual frustration for doing cartooning, but...
Well, Kim is so elaborative.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, I don't, if you've never read that interview, it's, and I know you like Kim Deitch a lot.
Yeah.
It's just this amazing, it's also an interesting dynamic because there's like the dynamic of Kim Deitch being this elder statesman cartoonist and Zach Sally being this up and coming cartoonist sort of, and there's this sort of like, you know, like Truffaut Hitchcock kind of thing going on where it's like, you can tell how much Zach appreciates Kim's work and Kim seems to kind of appreciate Zach's appreciation, and he's kind of like, he's not like dispensing wisdom, but he's just sort of like, you know, really giving this young cartoonist like some not advice, but he's really like forthcoming in what's worked for him and what hasn't worked. But there's this thing where there's like, when two cartoonists are interviewing each other, it's just like, you know, you kind of tell how much these two guys love comics, and they can be frustrated with it and it can be hard, but they're just like, there's this core of like happiness for what they're doing, which I guess is easier to communicate to another artist than perhaps like you know, some veteran critic for the Comics Journal.
Well, that kind of, a while ago, I had Frank Santoro on, and he had a pretty diverse selection of rants. Well, one that stuck out was the one about the importance of, I guess, mentoring, and what you're talking there kind of references that, and kind of that importance of sharing that knowledge and kind of all being a part of, like, communicating what it is, because, I mean, in a lot of ways, comics is still relatively new and changing completely.
Yeah. What do I think about mentoring?
Sure. I was kind of blabbing on a statement, but...
Well, I don't know. I guess mentoring is not something that cartooning really has built in, right? I mean, you know, in painting, there's apprenticeships and stuff like that, and comics doesn't really have that. You're kind of more on your own. I guess when I was young and getting into comics, all the cartoonists that I would meet and hang out with were much older than me. But once I moved to New York, I started to meet people my age that were doing comics. And actually, those people were more mentors to me. I guess peers were more like mentors to me, because I could sort of relate to their to what they were going through more. And it was, I felt just more comfortable around, I just felt closer to the kind of art they were making. And that was kind of a mentorship. I should definitely mention Dylan Williams, who has been, I wouldn't say so much a mentor to me, but a huge supporter of my work, which is probably a big aspect of mentorship. And I think Dylan's enthusiasm for my work has been really, like, indescribably helpful. Especially if it's someone whose art and taste you admire, like I admire Dylan's, where if this person who you really respect sees something in your work that is, obviously that really makes you want to forge forward, or it gives you a little more courage to go forward.
Let's talk about Dylan.
Okay.
The publisher of Sparkplug Comics, in Windy Corner number 2, he had one of the more touching pieces I've read recently, which I kind of kind of pulled at my heartstrings, and it's not intentional in any way to be like that. It's just an honest recollection of a really important influence on him and how the relationship was and how that affected who he is. His remembrances.
Yeah, I was so happy with that. That was, like, one of the most well-received portions of Windy Corner number 2 with Dylan's contribution, and people know Dylan now as a publisher, but I remember going into a comic store and buying Reporter number 1 and being really into it and always loving Dylan's cartooning. And I think he gets a little, I don't think he gets enough attention for his cartooning, so I was really happy that piece resonated with people as much as it did. I think Dylan's cartooning is great, and I love that Alex Toth piece. Oh, they're doing construction in the apartment upstairs from where I live. Can you hear that?
That's fine. Keep going.
Okay. That's a great piece by Dylan. And I think the kind of, like, unstated thing about that piece is that, like, Dylan publishes Sparkplug, and he publishes all these kind of, a lot of them, very experimental works, like John Hankowitz. But he also is a comics historian and knows all this stuff about old comics. And he's this rare example of someone who can appreciate all, like, he deeply loves Golden Age cartooning, but he also loves, like, you know, very, he loves all types of new mini comics, too, and so I think that's rare in comics that you find people who know what's great about two very different kinds of cartooning, or can equally appreciate it and be equally enthusiastic about both kinds.
The interesting thing about his story, I guess, is his juxtaposition between the very simple Alex Toth style lettering, and I found the artwork really fascinating, because everything else I've seen by him has been black and white.
Yeah.
And figure, it's characters driven, really, and this is, there's no characters at all, which was kind of fascinating in that kind of obituary technique, I guess.
Yeah. No, that's definitely. I mean, he's got a huge range of different styles that he has at his disposal. I mean, I love that piece he did on Alex Toth, and I wish maybe Dylan will do more color stuff, or he'll do more remembrances of his experiences with mm-hmm. older cartoonists.
Well, anyone who knows me knows I'm on a big Alex Toth kick, so it was nice picking this up and like, oh, little Alex.
Yeah.
It was a nice touch. Now, tell me about the other, in Windy Corner, you did, I guess, a little mini biography of Lois Linsky?
Yes, Lois Linsky.
Who's Lois Linsky? Tell us about Lois Linsky.
Well, that's kind of the nice thing about Windy Corner, that I get to put in a piece by Dylan and an article about Lois Linsky, where it's kind of this thing where Windy Corner is this weirdly autobiographical thing where there's art by people I admire and I'm close to, and then there's articles about artists that have, been important, informative, and, like, you know, inspiring to me. So it's this weird, like, when I look at Windy Corner, the stuff that isn't my comics is, like, weirdly autobiographical and important to me, because it's like all my different interests kind of squished together. And Lois Linsky is just this artist who she's written hundreds and hundreds of children's books, and she's illustrated hundreds more. And she's kind of this anonymous name, but almost everyone has seen her work in some variety or another. And she kind of has this this sort of, like, restrained humanism that I really value and I would somehow like to have in my work, where it's not saccharine or overly sentimental, but it's there's this real quality of kindness to it that I think is so hard to get in your work naturally, but she somehow got it into her work very naturally. And she's just very prolific, and she's published all these books, and I have a lot of them, and I've looked at all the illustrations, and I've never seen, like, an illustration that she dashed off. They're always just, like, she seemed to, like, even though she was essentially drawing the same kind of things over and over again, she always, like, put her all into every little, small illustration.
Seems like there's a lot of really neat stylistic variations in the piece you've chosen, too, or in the pieces.
Yeah, she, even though it's, like, again, it's like essentially the same stuff that she's drawing, these children in kind of domestic scenes. She did have, like, a way of changing the way she represented that stuff. But I just admire her for her, I mean, I don't want to say, like, unironic, but what I wrote about her in that piece is that Lois Linsky is, her stories are very traditional, and the kind of things she was interested in are very traditional, like friendship and, family life. But her art was so modern, and that's a combination that I wish there was more of, actually.
Taking it to different levels and playing the two off each other, I guess.
It really works for me. I mean, I always respond to stuff like that.
Kind of reminds me, some of the stuff in there kind of remind me a little bit of what Richard McGuire was trying to do with things as well.
Yeah, it's true. It does look a little bit like Richard McGuire. I love Richard McGuire stuff, but I love Lois Linsky stuff just because I'm always so impressed with what Richard McGuire does, but I can't enter into it like I do with Lois Linsky stuff.
No, his stuff...
But, I mean, his stuff is just...
It's a challenge, I find.
Yeah, I don't know if it's so much visually a challenge, but I guess I don't... I don't know Lois Linsky, but I feel more friendly with her than I do with Richard McGuire.
Mm-hmm. It's more opening.
Yeah, but she had this whole, like... I think what's interesting about her is that, like, all these books she did over her life, they kind of add up to this amazing project. Like, if you were just to look at all her books together, there's kind of this, like, they kind of build up into this tide, like, this amazing statement about, like, children and, you know, without, amazingly, without being preachy, they just become this thing about how, you know, the central thing in all her books is that there are children from many different parts of the country, and they're all very different, but we should be accepting and of all of them, which sounds so creepy when I say it over the phone, but there's just something about, that's like the X factor of her artwork, that she has this simple thing that she's trying to say, and she somehow says it with so eloquently, but without without laying it on, without hitting you over the head with it.
Now, tell me, you're in the midst of buzzing comics communities. What are some people that are really blowing you away right now?
Well, I really like Zach Sally's series that he's doing for Fantagraphic, Sammy the Mouse. I really there's a lot of mini comics out recently that I really like. I was just reading this mini comic by Jeremy Onsmith, which I think is he did this split with John Hankowitz, and his story in it about getting some dental work done was, I just read it last night, and it was, I've always liked Jeremy Onsmith stuff, but I thought that was great. Everything that Lily Carey has been putting out is sort of like quietly perfect short stories are really inspiring to me. I kind of want to get to the point where I can do a short story like that where sort of every little bit of it adds up to this like punch. This is cartoonist Sakura Maku. Oh, Lily Carey's going to be in the next Windy Corner as well.
Oh,
and
nice.
Sakura Maku, who's been doing mini comics, I really like her. Everything she's doing is great. There's this collective of cartoonists from Baltimore called Closed Caption Comics, and I like all the artists that are involved in that, but there's two artists, Molly Goldstrom and Molly Colleen O'Connell. They do more kind of visual stuff than story-focused stuff, like Zach Sally and Lily Carey, but their visual stuff is just so... Molly Goldstrom's work is kind of just like these very tight, beautiful illustrations that I really love.
Who opens up Windy Corner number 2?
Yeah, she opens up Windy Corner number 2. There's just so many. I feel very happy to be part of cartooning right now, just because it's really like a true movement where just all this amazing work is being done, and it just I don't know. It's like a dream come true to be a part of it. As dorky as that sounds.
That's okay. We're dorks. That's something we all deal with. I think that's part of the industry, isn't
it? We'll deal with our dorkiness.
Yeah. I'm pushing my glasses up my nose as I speak.
Okay.
So Windy Corner number 3, when does that come out?
Windy Corner number 3 should be out at Mocha.
Oh, wow.
If I
that's
I
soon.
Have to finish all my stuff. And some of the contributors still have to finish their stuff. But it looks like everyone's going to get their stuff in on time. So,
tell me about the stuff in it.
There will be some opening pages by Lily Carey. She did a 4-page strip, which is going to open the book. Then Molly O'Connell is going to draw the table of contents. Then there will be some comics by me. Then there's going to be a really great 9-page story by Sakura Maku, which I've seen a little bit of. There will be an essay on Jippy, the cartoonist Jippy. Oh. I think that's how you pronounce his name.
Jippy? He's
Jippy
fucking
by,
fantastic.
Frank Santoro.
Oh, geez, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I hope it's going to be awesome, unless
no,
Frank
sure
goes on a rant. Love you, Frank.
I'm sure people will be talking about that. There's going to be an interview by Vanessa Davis with Carol Tyler.
Oh, nice.
Which should be pretty cool.
In time for her new book?
Is Carol Tyler's new book coming out?
Yeah.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Yeah. In the spring, the one about her
dad. It's that one that you saw little bits of in Lake Bloomer.
I think this is the one about her dad.
Oh wow! Well, I will
his
be first
time
in line
World War II.
I will be first in line to buy that. Carol Tyler is. Sometimes like when people ask you which comics you're into, I kind of forget to mention Carol Tyler, but she is. She's easily my. She's like one of my top 3 cartoonists of all time. So I'm really excited about Vanessa interviewing her.
That should be interesting.
And there's going to be the cartoonist James McShane is going to write an essay about why he draws the way he draws. Janelle Hessing, who for years has done the zine Tales of the Blarg, which is this like Berkeley, very famous Berkeley zine. She's going to do a comic about her teenage obsession with Daniel Klaus, which would be pretty funny. The cartoonist Jason Miles, who I'm also really into lately, who did this comic Dead Ringer for Lamano Books, he's going to illustrate the table of he's going to illustrate the letters page. And this artist Joseph Hart, who's this painter from Brooklyn, who isn't really involved in comics, he just does a lot of gallery work, he is going to do the back cover, which I've seen, and it's looks amazing.
Awesome. This sounds like a small package you put together.
Yeah, it's going to be, and there'll be an essay by me on, in addition to comics by me, there'll be an essay on the illustrator Garth Williams.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Austin.
Okay, thank you, Robin. And thanks for having me. I listen to Inkstuds all the time when I'm at my table drawing. So.
And just so people know, you're going to be contributing to the Inkstuds site at some point with some...
That's true. I have to get it together to do that, but I will definitely be interviewing some New York and Brooklyn-based cartoonists for you in the near future.
Well, for everyone, because...
Right, not for you, Rob.
I think, and I'm excited about it because it's going to add a neat aspect where, I mean, I'm pretty limited as far as who I'm exposed to in a lot of ways. Being in Vancouver, Canada, people send me a bunch of stuff. Occasionally, I'm able to make it to a comic convention and see stuff. And
but isn't Vancouver like a cultural mecca?
No, I mean we've got some really talented folks in town, and it there is a lot more happening. Like a lot of folks are settling here. Brandon Graham's up here, and he's like super talented boy, and he's got some folks around him that are really talented, and so there's kind of a meat house contingent in Vancouver now, which is kind of interesting. So, but
that will be exciting for the future.
Yeah.
Vancouver.
I was out for lunch, and like five people at the table were in the latest meat house book, and it was like,
oh wow,
yeah, that was interesting. So yeah, I look forward to whoever you decide to toss in there. It'll be interesting.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Austin.
Thank you so much, Robin.
And have a swell day. Bye.
Bye.
That is Austin English, and his books are Windy Corner Magazine 1, 2, and 3 will be out in the summer, as well as Christina and Charles from Sparkplug Books, Sparkplug Comic Books. Check them out. See you later, y'all. CITR 101.9 FM.
It's such a joke what he asked me to do. Think I'm a fool. Janine, don't go with those guys. What's in it for you? In another day, your dream it will appear. I touch you on the arm. You were so warm. It's such a joke. It's such a joy.